This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's Thursday. We have Reporters Roundtable Thursday for you. And let's talk first with Dan Carton. He's the chief political reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana. And as always, Dan, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Got it on mute. Happy to be here.
Yeah, you're just getting ready for tonight's presidential debate. I know that. Yeah,
it's a tough world these days.
Right? That's right. It is. We're either working from home or we're working with technology that we haven't quite mastered yet. So I don't know. Whichever it is, it doesn't matter. But Dan, tell us first, if you will, about speaking of mute buttons. I suppose that probably have been concerned that he probably wished that Facebook probably had one. We're talking about a congressional candidate who put out some very damning remarks out on Facebook, and now he in turn has been damned, in a way, if that's the correct usage of the word, by his political bosses. Tell us what Mark Leva happened to have written on Facebook and what his political uppers will have to say about it.
Yeah, Mark Leva is the Republican candidate running for Congress to represent Northwest Indiana in the U.S. House. He's a familiar name to a lot of region voters. This is his eighth time as the Republican nominee running for this House seat. He's lost in all seven previous races, and we'll see what happens this time. He's optimistic because he's not running against Pete Visklovsky, but this is a district that has never elected a Republican since it was centered on Northwest Indiana in 1932, so he's got an uphill trek to end up in Congress. Mm-hmm. And not making it any easier, like you said, are these Facebook posts. One of them seemed to suggest that white supremacy was something to be welcomed. Another seemed to argue in favor of white privilege. And both of them were condemned immediately by the chairman of the Lake County Republican Party and the Indiana Republican Party as things that are not representative of the Republican Party. Leva has since insisted that he was being sarcastic with his Facebook posts, but the sarcasm seems to have not been understood by the leaders of his own political party. So we'll see what effect that has on the election, but, you know, it's probably not good.
Well, you mentioned in your story about what Lake County Republican Party Chairman Dan Durnell has to say, and you also had a chance to speak with the folks with the Indiana Republican Party leadership. What were their remarks concerning whatever Mark Leva had to put out there on Facebook?
Yeah, Dan Durnell, Highland Republican, he's actually been very successful recently in converting Democrats in Lake County to Republicans. He's said straight up that Facebook posts in favor of white supremacy are not what the Republican Party is about, and that the party actually opposes anything that would seem to suggest there are benefits to white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Jake Oakman, the spokesman for the Indiana Republican Party, outright condemned what he called disgusting and divisive materials. Oakman said that the Leva's Facebook posts have no place in the political discussion anywhere in society, let alone from someone who wants to represent Hoosiers in the United States Congress. So, I don't know if Leva's got the message. He seems to be sticking by his guns in this case, but, you know, his own party more or less disowning him is, tells you pretty much everything you need to know about what he, the reaction to mm-hmm. his Facebook posts.
Now, you mentioned earlier, of course, about the fact that that Leva is running against Frank Mervan, who's currently the North Township trustee here in Lake County, and also a Libertarian candidate, Michael Strauss. All three of them are the ones that were in the recent debate that was put out there online that we had here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Mm-hmm. What did Mervan have to say about Leva's post, and what did Strauss have to say as well?
Yeah, they also both weighed in on this. Mervan said that Leva's post that there's no place in political discourse for public officials and those seeking public office to share insensitive and intolerant social media posts on race relations. The Democrat linked it to these ongoing discussions about race that are happening in Indiana and across the country. And Mervan said that unlikely, but he wants to bring people together, help people get a good paying job and affordable health care. And that's the message he's been, touting throughout this entire campaign. Michael Strauss, the Libertarian, as you'd expect, defended Leyva's right to say whatever he wanted, because, it didn't interfere with the rights of others. That's a very sort of libertarian position. But he also described Leyva's Facebook post as insensitive and didn't seem to embrace the message contained within.
I know also, too, that you had an opportunity to talk, of course, to get reaction, response, I suppose, from Mark Leyva about all this. And didn't have much to say, but I understand he wasn't particularly pleased about, I guess, all of the attention it's brought.
Yeah, he was not pleased. He declined to comment on the Facebook post specifically. He said, more or less, it's social media doesn't count. This is social media, all right. I'm not even going to comment. Mm-hmm. Then he also went on to say that, his postings on social media are protected by the First Amendment, which is true. I mean, the Times isn't the government. The First Amendment protects against the government restricting a person's freedom of speech. We just report what he's saying. He was not pleased that somebody would actually question what he was posting on social media. And then he said that he would not be commenting to the Times on election night.
Oh.
So I guess if Mark Leyva is the winner on election night, you won't be hearing from him in the Times.
I guess you'll just have to go with whatever the official Lake County Election Board results are and say no more, right?
I mean, that was a pretty important call I was making on election night to victorious Mark Leyva.
One of the other stories that you had, of course, is keeping track of what the candidates for governor have to say. And you had a chance to watch and listen to the latest debate. The first of two, as a matter of fact. There's another one coming up here next week. And it's one of those you can find out, too, online and listen to on Lakeshore Public Radio. Tell us about the story that you had about the first Eric Holcomb and Woody Myers and Donald Ringwater debate.
Yeah, that was... it was an interesting debate. There was a lot of talk about the coronavirus, as you'd expect, but not as much as I had expected. There were about three questions about the coronavirus during the hour-long debate. I actually thought it would consume more of the debate because it was, it's been the single most important issue this year. But the questions that the debates are run by the nonpartisan Indiana Debate Commission. The questions are submitted by Hoosiers, and Hoosiers apparently had a lot more questions than just COVID questions. Mm-hmm. So, while a big part of the debate focused on COVID-19, there were other questions as well about education, gun control, lots of other policies. But in terms of COVID, it was an interesting situation where, Governor Holcomb has been steering Indiana through this pandemic and hasn't been getting a lot of public criticism. And during the debate, he had to be confronted by two people who basically said he wasn't doing a very good job. The Democrat, Woody Myers, said that Indiana should have more restrictions to try and stop the spread of the coronavirus. The Libertarian, Donald Ringwater, said, that in effect that Eric Holcomb is a tyrant and should be loosening up all the restrictions, especially in terms of the face mask directive that the governor has put out.
One of the other points that you make in your story about the debate this week talks about what Woody Myers had to say, which was not, I guess, expected. I'm sure he planned it out, so it wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision to announce this. But he had something to say about the person who is eventually, I guess, not going to be the superintendent of public instruction any longer. Tell us what that was all about and some of the reaction maybe that came from that.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise. Beginning next year, the state superintendent of public instruction switches from an elected post to an appointed post. The title also changes to Secretary of Education. So the governor elected in this next coming up will appoint the new Secretary of Education. In a bit of a surprise, Dr. Myers, who is a Democrat, said he would keep on the Republican state superintendent of public instruction that we have right now, Jennifer McCormick, because he believes that she is doing a outstanding job overseeing the Indiana Department of Education. And, you know, he believes that what needs to be done is what's best for children. And he believes McCormick has the best interest of children at heart, even though she is a Republican and he is a Democrat. You know, he thinks that she would be the best person for the job.
Now, in that respect, what did Myers and as well as the other candidates, Holcomb and Rainwater, have to say about the subject of education?
Well, what's interesting is Governor Holcomb has not said who his Secretary of Education will be. It's likely not going to be McCormick because, obviously, if she's hanging out with the Democrats.
That goes without saying, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, right before we went on the air, Donald Rainwater announced that Dawn Wooten, who McCormick defeated in the Republican convention to win the Secretary of or State Superintendent nomination in 2016, would be his pick for a Secretary of Education. So, a little bit of breaking news right there.
Oh, that's interesting.
But yeah, there. Besides that. You know, there was kind of this ongoing battle over teacher pay and education funding. Indiana spends about half of its annual budget on kindergarten through 12th grade education. Democrats have been insisting that teachers deserve pay raises and want more money put into that. Governor Holcomb had created a commission to look into that before COVID-19 struck. The idea was that during this upcoming budget session at the General Assembly in 2021, they would find sort of a permanent way to increase teacher pay across the state. Not sure that's going to happen due to how COVID has, you know, hit state tax revenue in a lot of different ways. But Governor Holcomb did say that his long-term goal is to get to about an average starting salary of $40,000 for Indiana teachers and a average salary for ongoing teachers of at least $60,000.
One of the other stories, too, that you had in print and online in the Times, Dan, talks about what Indiana's attorney general has to say. In fact, he had some harsh words, I guess, at least in writing anyway, in an official opinion about Governor Holcomb concerning his views on coronavirus, I guess, and places of worship. Will you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so it's not just the Libertarian hitting Holcomb on coronavirus restrictions. It's within his own party. Republican Attorney General Curtis Hill came out with an official opinion last week saying that the governor exceeded his authority by putting some voluntary restrictions on churches in the early days of the coronavirus pandemic. The governor urged them to close their doors and put in a bunch of suggestions in terms of, you know, how to distribute communion without, you know, multiple people touching this thing that's going to go in your mouth, and how to conduct outdoor services. The attorney general made the argument that the restrictions on religious institutions went farther than the restrictions on other businesses, and that unduly usurps the religious freedom of Hoosiers. And he made the case that, you know, Holcomb was violating the First Amendment rights of people with these regulations. The regulations never were enforced. They were always just recommendations, and they were only on the books for 3 weeks. So I don't think there's going to be any long-term consequences from this. But, you know, Attorney General Hill wants to assert sort of a religious liberty argument. So, you know, he's one of those people who's also looking for a new job.
Yeah.
Since he didn't get renominated. So he, you know, there's a lot of movement on the Republican side toward religious liberty arguments. You see it with the Amy Coney Barrett nomination. So this may be part of that, being willing to criticize more or less moderate Republicans like Holcomb and standing up for principles that Curtis Hill obviously believes in.
Now, if you will, this in your story as well, tell us about Representative Kurt Nisley, or Nisley. I'm not sure how he pronounces his last name.
Yeah.
He's a Republican. I think he's from someplace from East Central Indiana. But he's the person that really got all of this started as far as the advisory opinion that he'll finally put out here. This is concerning, I guess, the decision the governor made about having to close bars and restaurants and businesses because of the pandemic.
Yeah, Kurt Nicely is kind of a gadfly within the House Republican caucus. He's not been afraid to challenge former House Speaker Brian Bosma on issues. Kurt Nicely, probably his overriding concern is banning all abortions under any circumstances at all times. He's filed legislation every year to do that. It doesn't move in the General Assembly because it's patently unconstitutional, but he stands up and fights for it and sort of makes these other Republicans shut him down. And, you know, so that's where he's coming from. And, you know, any legislator can request an attorney general's opinion on anything. Nicely requested this one on the religious freedom. But he's also been calling for a special session of the General Assembly to override Holcomb's executive orders. And this is going to be an issue as we go into the 2021 legislative session. There's a lot of Republicans who see Governor Holcomb's actions as executive overreach, and they are going to want to scale back his emergency authority, which, you know, by then maybe there's a vaccine and it doesn't matter as much in terms of COVID, but with a future emergency, the governors of Indiana will probably have a lot fewer tools in the toolbox to respond to a similar, you know, public health crisis or even just a disaster or any other kind of emergency.
Well, Dan, there's one final story we'd like to briefly cover here, and this is the word that you got out here to remind people, and in fact, it's even more important today. It's Thursday, October 22nd, and today is a very important deadline that if you really, really, really want to vote by mail, get your applications in today.
Absolutely. You have until 11:59 p.m. The best way to do it is to go to indianavoters.com. You log into your registration record and click the Vote by Mail button if you're eligible to vote by mail. This is the last day to request a mail-in ballot. And if you do request a mail-in ballot, the Secretary of State is urging people to fill it out and return it as soon as you get it, because under Indiana law, ballots have to be back in the county election office, physically there, by noon on election day. Otherwise, they won't be counted. It can't be postmarked by election day. It can't be, arrive the next day. It has to be there by noon on election day. Mm-hmm. So as soon as, if you get a mail-in ballot, if you have one sitting at home, fill it out and mail it back as soon as possible if you want it to count this year's election.
Well, it's very important, and we certainly appreciate you putting that into a story as well that we were able to talk about. Dan Carton is the chief political reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana, and as always, thank you for being with us, and talk to you again real soon, we hope.
Anytime. Thanks.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte on this Reporters Roundtable Thursday. Let's talk to Jerry Davidge. He's a columnist for the Post-Tribune, and he's put out a politically charged column, I guess you could say. Certainly it deals with politics, and Jerry has had an opportunity to try on T-shirts, one from each political party in the presidential race. And Jerry, first of all, thanks for joining us on the program today.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Well, the column that I'm sure that's probably caused the most interest, at least in recent columns, not the only one, but in recent columns at least, is one where you tried out Donald Trump and Joe Biden T-shirts in public for 1 month. Tell us about the idea for the column, in turn actually about wearing the T-shirts, and what kind of reactions that you got from people who saw you.
Yeah, I initially purchased the T-shirts online because I couldn't find a local store that sold both of them. And the idea was just to wear each shirt. One says Biden-Harris 2020. The other one says Trump-Pence. I think Make America Great. Mm-hmm. Just wear these shirts in public, see the reaction from people. I didn't really have to engage with people specifically. I wasn't trying to instigate anything. I just wanted to see what people reacted to me if I didn't say anything. And, of course, the reactions were very different. Not as much as I expected, I guess, but it was different, though. A lot of Trump supporters were very complimentary, very praising of me wearing this Trump shirt in public. They would either tell me verbally, they were praise me verbally, or they would kind of give me the old wink and nod, or a silent nod, or a thumbs up. I got a lot of thumbs up kind of thing. I didn't get the same responses with the Biden shirt, so to speak. On last Saturday, during the Freedom Rally in downtown Valparaiso, I brought both the shirts there because everything's going to be kind of politically charged, obviously. It was actually a pro-Trump rally in downtown for 3 hours. I was there beforehand and a little bit during, and I wore the shirts beforehand. And that's the kind of responses I got, was it kind of illustrated the same responses I was getting for the past month or so, off and on, when I wear these shirts.
Mm-hmm. When you were there at the Freedom Rally, did you get any specific comments? Like you said, you got a lot of wink and nods, I would imagine, or at least some silent recognition of the fact that you were wearing a T-shirt for a certain party. What specifically did anybody tell you?
Well, as soon as I got out of the car, even before I got my mask on to go to this downtown park, Central Park Plaza, two guys walked past me with a GOP shirt, Trump shirt, and they're very vocal about it. Hey, love the shirt. Nice job. Good going. We're proud. You know, that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. So it was very vocal, of course. I didn't get the same responses with the Biden shirt one way or another, even in the past month or so. So without a doubt, the Trump shirt caused more reaction. It either encouraged people to say something to me, or it encouraged people to go away from me. I know I lost some just normal conversations I would typically have during my errands or my work day or whatever, and people purposely avoided me or didn't look me in the eye or did not want to really have a conversation with me because of that.
I understand that as far as of course you got the response from the Republicans for that particular rally, but how about for the Democrats in Northwest Indiana that encountered you with the T-shirt on?
Yeah, no one wanted me to see that, to have that T-shirt on. A lot of people said early on, even when I put this idea out on social media, that, oh, don't wear that shirt in public. That'll cause you problems. You can get beat up. You can get hurt. You can get harmed. None of that actually took place, although I could have wore it in more dangerous spots of the country or the region, obviously, and I did not.
Mm-hmm.
But, a lot of Democrats, I think, were just more quiet about things all the way around. Although they did warn me, and a lot of them said there was no way you could not even pay them money to wear a Trump shirt in public, no matter how much money.
Oh, my goodness. I know that your column mentions one attendee in particular, Chadwick Bukur, if I'm pronouncing Chadwick's name properly, who mentions about, some thoughts that you've got from him on Facebook. Tell us a little bit more about what he had to say and about the support for the Donald Trump campaign.
Without a doubt, there was a lot of Trump supporters there, obviously, at the rally. A lot of them were upset with me. They thought I mischaracterized the rally. I went there beforehand and shot some video, posted it on my Facebook pages, and it showed that there was nobody there yet. And then I circled back a couple hours later in the middle of the rally, took some more video and showed that there were people there. Some of the people who were there thought I was mischaracterizing it by not showing the video of enough people there or the more crowded spots of the park, which I thought was wrong. And then one of the people I heard from was this Chadwick, who commented on my Facebook page. He said, support for Trump is authentic, organic, and crosses social, racial, and cultural divides. The truth is, we see through it. More and more people daily are waking up and seeing through it, the false left-right divide and conquer BS.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that represented with a lot of Trump supporters that told me through the months, through the weeks, and, of course, on Saturday. So I wanted to put it in my column. I was trying to give also a voice to Trump supporters as well as Biden supporters.
We're talking with Post Tribune columnist Jerry Davich about the one particular column that he had in the newspapers, in print and online. This is about the time that he had gotten the campaign T-shirts for both the Biden-Harris campaign and for the Donald Trump campaign. And you mentioned that in the column that you'd never done this before, not wearing any shirts or any hats or any buttons for political campaigns, candidates locally or nationally. And this is probably the first and last time you're going to do this. That's still your feeling?
Without a doubt. I've never wore campaign shirts, buttons, hats, nothing. I don't even wear... I'm a Chicago Bears fan for 50 years. I don't even wear a Chicago Bears jersey. I just don't wear things like that, especially politically speaking. I don't need the extra, interrogation or scrutiny or whatever by a shirt. It defines us way too much, and I think there's more a gray area to talk about with politics instead of the black and white, instead of Trump versus Biden. There's a lot of complex issues in between. I'd rather talk with somebody. So, no, I've never worn the shirts before. I still have them in my closet. I don't think I'll wear them again unless it's for a follow-up to this column to wear it in specific spots. that might illustrate a more dimensional for another column as well. Mm-hmm.
Now, so as you mentioned, you've had some comments already on your Facebook page about this. What other comments besides the one we've just heard from Chadwick Bakur about that have you received so far, not only about the act that you accomplished with wearing the T-shirts, but also the column that you wrote about it?
Yeah, well, I've heard from a lot of people who commented on both of my Facebook pages. I have one called Talking Points, which is more of a professional Facebook page. And on that page specifically, a lot of readers and sources have commented that they thought I should not have done it. Either I was making a mockery of democracy, so to speak, or the system itself. And other people were just interested more than anything. It's kind of a sociological experiment is what all it was. And I was curious of the reactions, and obviously there are reactions. And it wasn't only just from people in Northwest Indiana. I've heard from people, because it's the Post Tribune is owned by Chicago Tribune Media, so a lot of Chicago Tribune readers have contacted me the past couple days. And then I've heard from people across the country who really never saw anything like this, and they were just curious how the results turned out, whether they agree with it or not. As one reader told me yesterday with a tweet, I believe, through Twitter. Mm-hmm. She said she appreciates that I really didn't tip my hand if I'm a Trump voter or a Biden voter, at least not in this column specifically. So she appreciated that. I just put it out there as an experiment, and she was happy with the result.
There's one final paragraph I'd like you to talk about, Jerry. In fact, it's the last paragraph in the column itself, talking about people wanting to belong to something. And that's definitely human nature, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of my columns circle back to this bigger picture, this broader aspect of humanity. And of course, it really focuses on politics as well. But people want to believe, I mean, they want to believe in something, want to belong to something. And what I wrote, they want to belong to either a political party, a social movement, or what they believe is the right side of history. And as you know, with Trump and Biden supporters, Democrats and Republicans, they are convinced they are siding with the right side of history. So I think a lot of this boils down to people wanting a sense of belonging. And at that rally, I got that same impression again. Every rally I go to, I covered the Obama when he was voted as president. I was at Grant Park that night when he was accepting. And that feeling there, people wanted to belong to that movement, just like people want to belong to this Trump movement that took place last Saturday. They want to belong.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jerry, thank you very much for talking about your column that you had in the Post Tribune about wearing the Biden T-shirt and the Trump T-shirt and the reaction that you got not only at the time that you wore them, but also later that you got on your Facebook pages. Thanks for talking about it today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the consideration.
You're welcome. That's Post Tribune columnist Jerry Davich. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Today we have the last part of our series on young women who are changing their communities. Side Effects Public Media's reporter Darian Benson spoke with a first-generation Mexican-American from Warsaw, Indiana. And here is her story about seeking justice for immigrants.
My name is Maria Duenas Lopez. I am 22 years old. I am the president and founder of Warsaw Area Voters, a community organization made to increase voter engagement in Kosciuszko County elections. In 2016, I figured I'm a young woman, Latina, and it's like, so what role does my vote have in a Republican supermajority state? Probably not a lot. India's more left-leaning, but Warsaw is not. It's very conservative. I'm like, my vote doesn't matter. Really, after seeing AOC win, and after seeing all these other women of color around the U.S. winning in competitive districts, I was inspired. I was like, you know, what if it does? What if it does count? When we recognize that our vote does count and that it does make a difference, then we're empowered to cast our vote. We're empowered to take a stand in civic engagement in other aspects of our lives. Democracy means having elected officials that truly represent their constituents' points of views. Democracy is having basic human rights, which include the right to vote, the right to education, the right to drive, and it means a lot to the immigrant community, because we all came here in some way because democracy offers a better life for us than whatever system of government we had before, whatever we experienced before. And this is why we put our lives on the line when crossing borders. The democracy in this country is something to fight for. Can't speak for everybody, but that's why we're here. Democracy is the reason a lot of us are here. Young people have the most important role in democracy because we kind of set the tone for what we expect from government. We will protest if there's injustice. And we will fight through organizing, through activism, through any form that we can. We will fight for what is right and set the tone for how people in power should respect us, how they should view us. I think that has been super evident this year.
And our thanks to Side Effects Public Media reporter Darian Benson for our four-part series on young Indiana activists. It's part of the Amplified America initiative. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. Our thanks to Times of Northwest Indiana chief political reporter Dan Carden, to Jerry Davidge, who's a columnist for the Post Tribune, and to Jody Martin with the IU Public Policy Institute in Indianapolis. And we thank you for being with us. We'll be back with you on Monday.